God, hi everybody. I'm Maria Allwine, one of the organizers, and I want to introduce our next speaker. And he's with us from California via Skype. So you're going to hear him, but you're not going to see him, just like the Afghan youth last night. It's Derek Jensen, and I don't know how many of you are familiar with Derek Jensen's works. He's a really radical environmentalist. He has written many, many books. The latest book and the one that I read that has really changed my life is called Deep Green Resistance. All right. Great. So he's written that book with two other authors, Lier Keith and Eric McBay. It's a book I cannot recommend highly enough about organizing and real resistance. 200 species a day go extinct now. That's a crisis. And it's a crisis that so many people don't really seem to be responding to, you know, the general American public. It's okay. We don't see these other creatures that we live with, and we don't really care. But all of us here do, and Derek Jensen really does, too. So live, or whatever you want to call it, via Skype from California, we have Derek Jensen, and I'm really, really deeply thrilled to have him here with us.
So, am I on? Okay, great. The last few weeks, a lot of people have been throwing around the word occupation, as in Wall Street occupation, as in occupied DC. And these occupations are good. Any resistance against the corporate machine is good. But we need to remember that these occupations are taking place under a much larger occupation. We need to remember at all times that we're living on stolen land. The protest is taking place on stolen land. The Capitol is founded on stolen land. The White House is founded on stolen land. The entire omnicidal economy is founded on stolen land. What is a government of occupation? What does it do? It facilitates resource extraction, maximizes production at the expense of communities and of the natural world. That's what they do. So, what does the United States government do? It facilitates resource extraction and maximizes production at the expense of communities and of the natural world. The United States is functionally, systematically, a government of occupation, and capitalism is functionally, systematically, an economics of occupation. And of course, all my American Indian friends say, what the hell took you so long to figure this one out? I mean, look around. Where you're standing is supposed to be a wetlands. Where are the original inhabitants? Where are the wood bison? Where are the passenger pigeons? Where are the native humans? Chesapeake Bay has collapsed. This culture steals land bases from all its inhabitants, human and non-human alike, and then destroys them. That's what it does. We need to never forget that. And if we're to survive, we need to stop this planetary murder. In the reports I've seen of the various protests, I've seen a lot of people talking about jobs, a lot of people talking about corporate greed, a lot of people talking about sharing the wealth. But I haven't seen a lot of people talking about the fact that the entire system is based on land theft and on destroying the natural world. I think that needs to be the start of our conversations, because it should be painfully clear that the health of the planet's primary, far more important than any economic system, in part because without a living planet, you have no economic system whatsoever. You can't consume a planet and live on it. Only someone deeply insane, or an economist, as far as that is any difference, could think so. Asking for a bigger piece of the pie on a planet being murdered is a wee bit insufficient. But the wonderful thing is that these conversations are starting. By you being here, you're starting these conversations and starting the movement to end the larger occupation. So I guess I'd really like to start by thanking you for being here, by thanking all the protesters, thanking all the revolutionaries, thanking all of you who are here doing this good and great thing. This honest and true thing, this mighty and righteous thing, those of you who are holding hands through time and across space with those who have fought for freedom and justice, with John Brown, with Frederick Douglass, with Tecumseh, with the Wildleys and the suffragists, with Helen Keller, with civil rights workers and union members, with Ken Saro-Wiwa, with the people in the Arab Spring, with people the world over who are fighting for the right of self-determination, with the poor and the landless, with indigenous peoples fighting for their land, with groups like the Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta fighting to stop transnational corporations and the governments who serve them from destroying their land and their people. I'd like to thank all of you who are here because you understand that unless we wrest power away from corporations, unless this culture is stopped, that it will for all practical purposes end life on Earth. 200 species were driven extinct today, and 200 yesterday, and 200 the day before that. And they were your and my brothers and sisters. 90% of the large fish in the oceans are gone. 98% of the native forests. 99% of the native prairies. Salmon are depending on you, as are tigers and orangutans and coral reefs, monarch butterflies and red-legged frogs, western lilies and wild bison and Florida panthers. Of course, this culture kills humans, too. Human languages and human cultures are being driven extinct at an even faster rate than wild species. Capitalism and imperialism kill more than 1 million human children per year. There's almost 2 each and every minute, each and every day. Corporations are killing the planet. They're killing us. We've long been taught that the legal system is set up to protect us, but we have been lied to. It is well established that judicial accountability does not extend to those who kill or maim in the name of business, nor to those who impoverish our land bases. Since the legal system won't hold destructive institutions accountable, the responsibility falls on each of us. This means that all of us who care about salmon, for example, must learn to be accountable to salmon rather than loyal to political and economic institutions that do not serve us well. The same is true for those who care about Chesapeake Bay, for those who care about democracy, for those who care about communities, for those who care about the future, for those who care about any living being. And we must act on this loyalty. We must do whatever is necessary to protect our homes and our land bases from those who would destroy them. Only then will salmon be saved and for us. Only then will toxic dumping be stopped. Only then will we have democratic self-governance. Only then will we have a future. Because allowing destructive economic or political entities to destroy our land base is not merely unethical and unwise, but suicidal. The Declaration of Independence states that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. It would be more precise, however, to say that it is not the right of the people, nor even their responsibility, but instead something more like breathing. Something that if we fail to do, we die. If we as a people fail to rid our community of destructive institutions, these institutions will destroy our community. And if we as a community cannot provide meaningful and non-destructive ways for people to gain food, clothing, and shelter, then we must recognize it's not just specific destructive institutions, but the entire economic system that is pushing biological systems past breaking points. Once we recognize the destructiveness of this economic system, we have no choice, unless we wish to sign our own and our children's death warrants, but to fight for all we're worth and in every way we can to overturn it. There is nothing else to do. You can ask, by quoting the Declaration of Independence, am I calling for revolution? To which I will respond that this answer should be clear. You can ask then, if this means that I'm calling for the overthrow of the United States government, to which I will respond that this question comes far, far, far too late. For the government was long since overthrown, and those who overthrew it are known as ExxonMobil, British Petroleum, Halliburton, Monsanto, ADM, Walmart, Massey Coal, Goldman Sachs, Citibank. They are the real governors, and the United States government is a wholly owned subsidiary, brought to you by McDonald's, Pfizer, and Lockheed Martin. So then you can ask, am I advocating the overthrow of a government that is by, for, and of corporations? Am I advocating the overthrow of the corporate state? To which I will say, hell yes. My first words to you this evening were to thank you for being here. But I want to be clear that my gratitude does not yet extend to all of you. And I wish now to speak to the exceptions. I have a different message for the police, which is not yet thank you, but instead this very simple message. Join us. I've heard reports that the police in D.C. have been kinder and more helpful than the police in New York. But we have to admit that not beating or pepper spraying protesters is a pretty low standard. I suggest a much higher standard. Join us to take down the whole corporate state. I can think of many reasons you should join us. The first is that you have far more in common with us than you do with them. We share class interests. Neither of us are the rich. They steal from you like they steal from us. They poison you like they poison us. For all their pretty words, the elite hold you, like us, members of the working class, the poor, the middle class, in as much contempt as they do the others of the disposable, the others of the not rich, the others they use and throw away. Make no mistake, they will throw you away. Look at how they treat military veterans. And here's the point. They destroy your future like they destroy ours. The second reason you should join us is that it is the right and moral thing to do. A couple of years ago, I communicated with a policeman who wanted me to understand that it's the job of the police to protect people from sociopaths. I said, sure. And then I asked, why it is they don't protect us from rich sociopaths? And my African-American friends asked why they so rarely protect African-Americans from racism, from functional racism. And my women friends asked why they so rarely protect women from misogyny. Only 6% of rapists spend even one night in jail. Oh, by the way, I want to stop my talk here for a second and actually make a tangible suggestion to the police in addition to all this other stuff, which is I've heard from multiple women at this protest in D.C. that they are afraid to use the porta toilets at night because there are some strange men hanging around. So if there could be some protection either from within the group or from elsewhere for the women who want to use toilets at night, that would be a good thing. So back to my larger issues. Question for the police is, why don't you protect us from the sociopaths? Why, when there's a strike, do you protect the capitalists from the strikers? Why don't you protect the strikers from the capitalists? You use your batons on strikers. Why don't you use your batons to force the capitalists to come to terms? Why, when there's a meeting of global financiers, do you protect them from us? Why do you not do your job and protect us from them? Why have you not arrested Tony Hayward for murdering humans in the Gulf of Mexico? And for that matter, for murdering the Gulf of Mexico? Where were you when Massey Cole murdered miners? And where are you when Massey Cole murders entire mountains? Where are you when chemical companies kill so many people, so many children, that the entire region's called Cancer Alley? Where were you when democracy was stolen? Why aren't you doing your job? Of course, we can ask the same questions not just of police, but of ourselves. If you won't do your job to stop the sociopaths, then we're the ones who have to do this. And if you don't have the courage to help, at the very least have the common decency to get out of the way. Here's a couple of riddles, not very funny. Question. What do you get when you cross a long drug habit, a quick temper, and a gun? Answer, 2 life terms for murder, earliest release date, 2026. Question, what do you get when you cross 2 nation states, a large corporation, 40 tons of poison, and at least 8,000 dead human beings? Answer, retirement with full pay and benefits. Warren Anderson, CEO of Union Carbide, Bhopal. Here's another one. What do you call someone who conspires to put poison in the subways of Tokyo? Answer, a terrorist who's put in prison for life. Question, what do you call someone who conspires to put poison in water supplies in the United States? Answer, Dick Cheney. An oil and gas man, a fracker, a capitalist. Or if the poison is cyanide, we call it a transnational gold mining corporation. Just to make sure we get it, what consequences does someone pay for murdering humans and non-humans in the Gulf of Mexico? Answer, $1 million a year severance package and millions of shares of British Petroleum stock. The guy shouldn't receive stocks, he should be put in them. And once again for the police, don't tell me that you're just following orders. That defense was disallowed at the Nuremberg trials, and you need to disallow it now. Think about that and think about your legacy. do you really want for your legacy to be that you are muscle for anti-democratic forces? When your grandchildren ask you which side you were on, do you really want to say you were on the side of protecting corporations against human beings? Once again, this question is aimed not only at the police, but at all of us. And we all know that corporations run the government. I ask people all over the country, does the government take better care of human beings or corporations? Nobody ever says humans. Nobody. Most people laugh. It's a ridiculous question. Of course the government takes better care of corporations than it does human beings. So for all of us, whom are you serving? Whom are you protecting? That's why you should join us. What would happen if you were to join us to help us enforce cancer-free zones, oil spill-free zones, extinction-free zones, home foreclosure-free zones? Hell, why don't you enforce rape-free zones, hunger-free zones, economic and political democracy zones? And what if these zones were to extend all across the country? Here's a question for all of us, and not just the police. If we're going to have a government, and if we're going to have a government that's worth a good goddamn, whom should this government serve, corporations or human beings? So let me hear you. Corporations or human beings? I can't really hear you. Say it loud enough that they can hear you inside the boardrooms and the back rooms where they cut their deals and make their laws. Wait, you know, the reason I can't hear you is actually accidentally turned off the sound on my computer. Here, let me fix this one last time, loud as you can. Whom should government serve, corporations or human beings? Okay, that's the sound of history being made. That's the sound of revolution. And that's the sound of a democracy being born. And that sound is the third reason the police should join us. Because they sure as hell want to be on the winning side. And here's the deepest truth. We're going to win. When a government becomes destructive of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. It is long past time we make full use of our rights. Thank you very much.
All I can say is thank you so much, Derek. Thank you, thank you. And please, everybody, when I tell you that his latest book, Deep Green Resistance, has changed my life, I'm really serious. I cannot urge everybody enough to read his writings. Derek has been on Democracy Now. Familiarize yourself with what he has to say. He's really, really an important writer and an important person in our country today. Thank you, Derek.